Welcome to the Start Well podcast. I'm Dawn Thomas, your host. As a mother, financial advisor, and researcher, I know the importance of empowering young people on their financial journeys. Whether you're a parent, grandparent, or the coolest aunt or uncle, join me in exploring how impactful conversations about money can shape a young person's future. Let's harness their superpower of time and your superpower of influence to ensure they start well and continue to live well into the future. The information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not take into account your personal and financial objectives and situation. Before acting on any information discussed here, you should consider its appropriateness, having regard to your objectives, needs, and financial position. Today's episode of the Start Well podcast, we have our resident book reviewer, Michelle Flanagan, on once again to discuss the book, The Psychology of Money. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Dawn. How are you going today?
I'm doing well, Michelle. Just all the better for seeing you and being able to discuss another book. Now, we're on to book number two. And I realized something, Michelle, that with our previous recording, I didn't mention Simran Kaur's book, Girls That Invest, as a title. We were going like Simran Kaur talking about the book. Yeah, so listeners, today I'm making very clear, it's The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. And I think maybe with the previous review, did it ever catch you that Girls That Invest grammatically, for me, does like irk me a little bit because it should be Girls Who Invest? So I remember going to the library and even the librarian was like, that's wrong English.
I'm a numbers girl, Dawn. I'm a numbers girl before I'm a grammar checker. So yeah. No, it did not stand out to me.
Okay, so I think that's my rationale, is that during the last recording, I was just like, I couldn't say it. I just couldn't say it because grammatically it was just not.
It wasn't coming out correctly.
It was coming. I just couldn't. And it's just funny that even the librarian was like, are you sure this is a book you would recommend? Because the grammar's wrong. And I was like, okay, fair point. So I'll look more into that one. But today's book, The Psychology of Money, has come like highly, highly recommended as a book to read. Mm. And in our office, Cara Graham, one of our other principal advisors, she said she's read this twice. And we've also used this book as a giveaway prize to our young minds of our Start Well workshop. And now I'm going to get your perspective on how you feel this book actually delivers in terms of progressing somebody's money journey.
I think it's there are actually lots of really good takeouts, and I had my highlighter going on my Kindle. Mm. I think it just continuously sends home the messages of what we tell our clients. So there's a lot of good messages that you get from just reading every single chapter and the little bits of like fact behind it, or the little behavioral aspect behind it. So I loved that part of it. But I kind of did feel like I got stuck in the middle of it a little bit, but maybe that was because it was getting a bit repetitive and it was joining the dots of things, because it said, wait till chapter 10, or, you know, wait till we talk about this here and that type of thing. But overall, I thought it is a good book and it has some good important messages, and just like Girls That Invest, or Who Should Invest, the message of compound. We cannot talk about it enough with young people because it's significant.
Mm. Because Warren Buffett is a name that gets thrown up a lot. And even Cara, when she was doing the workshop on investing for the kids, did bring up Warren Buffett. And I think in this book, they say that there's been over 2,000 books written about Warren Buffett. But what they stated in the book is that $81.5 billion of Warren Buffett's $84.5 billion net worth was actually created from the age of 65 through compounding.
Yeah. But isn't that, don't you see that when you're looking, you know, when you're talking with your clients, or the journey when people are, I think, even up to their 40s, it just seems like this slow grind every single day. It's just grind, grind, grind. And the super's not growing that quickly. And then all of a sudden they get into their 40s and they get closer to 50 and their super's taking nice big chunks. And so compound is really playing through. And so that aspect, yes, that sentence in the book that talks about that he didn't make it all until later in life.
Like, yes. Well, he made a lot. It's just that he got even, like, it's so excessive with the compounding.
And what they've highlighted in this book is that Warren Buffett started at 10 years of age, right? And we in this podcast is really about young people starting. Because I think quite often when we say young, we might think about early 20s or 18. And they even gave the examples that, oh, Warren had started in his 30s to invest and then he retired in his 60s. He'll probably just be a millionaire.
Yes.
But because he started when he was 10 and he started small. And they're saying, I think, less about the fact that he was not just this money genius. He's kind of followed something that's tried and true. And is that sort of what that's what you were kind of saying before we started recording. Yeah, the recording that people, it's more about how you have this long-standing behavior to doing things.
So like what was I saying before? I was like, you do you, you know, you find out who you are and do your approach. But there is a really clear message in the book, and it's that if you don't do it, you won't get it either. Yeah. You know, so you have to do it and you have to be saving. You can't just spend it all. And I think that was probably not as big a message, but that is certainly a message that I would hope young readers would take out of it. So doing something is better than not doing anything, and doing it consistently over time is also the key, and for a long time.
Look, Michelle, there's with a book, right? And everyone approaches the book differently. And I wonder whether it spoiled my expectation of this book because it's been so, it's been so recommended as a favorite book. And I understand that you're reading it almost like a story. You did it on your Kindle in terms of that. I've got the hard copy of the book. I was just wondering, do you think the experience of going into that storytelling environment might be different if you maybe experienced it as a audiobook as opposed to reading it?
Yeah, it would be interesting. I have thought to do our next book as an audiobook, probably to test my own listening skills than anything, because I don't find audiobooks that easy to listen to.
Yes, it depends on what they're talking
distracted.
About.
They say something and I get off on a tangent in my own thought bubble. But I'm like, where was I? I think, I don't know. Yes, you could be right. The stories, and maybe because you absorb the stories a little bit better, like the Warren Buffett story, the Bill Gates story. So that was another interesting one, wasn't it? Like
luck and
time
risk.
And place.
Yeah, time and place. The only computer.
Luck and risk. And I was like, damn, that's really good. But, you know, you sometimes think about it, you know, you know about different people you know in your life, and perhaps there is a bit of luck and there is a bit of risk to it over time. I'll keep saying time because I think it was the biggest, a really great message. And you know, time is start young, and time will get you there in the end, and to not be in a rush about it.
So I think that's the thing. When we have our finance books, the different ones that we're going through, a typical finance book tends to have a few diagrams in there and they'll talk about investing concepts. And even what Cara said about why she liked this book, because it felt very much like you're reading a story that involves kind of financial concepts. So it's a little different in where we might look at a finance book. But you are saying that the message, by the time you finished the book, the message got home to you. It was very clear what you were taking out of it.
And the big message I love is knowing when enough is enough. Like you do you. Don't forget the noise, forget the distraction, forget what the hype of the media is. Choose what you need to do to create the life that you want, because the life I want is different to the life you want, Dawn, for you and your family, but that's okay. And you don't have to keep, it's the old saying of don't keep up with the Joneses. And if we like relate that to kids, is don't worry about what your mates have or don't worry about what your friends have. Worry about what it is that you want. And how you're going to actually get that in your life. So that if that is to be independent, then how is that going to happen? And what does that look like to you? And what does that mean to you? Like, let's frame that so that you're very clear when it comes to making decisions that is this going to achieve what is enough for me? The definition of happiness and what happiness looks like is different for everybody.
Yeah, and the book starts off with, doing well with money has little to do with how smart you are, but but how you behave. That's one of the points that's made early on. And also your experience around money historically will also shape your view of the world, because we only have this very small, what we feel is 80% of what we think is true. It's not really true of what it is in the world, but it's got everything to do with how we have been surrounded by money events, you know, whether it's a high inflationary environment, recession, you know, how your parents were. That's all shaped how we're looking at it. And very early on, it's kind of making that point of you need to kind of, this is not rocket science doing this. There are principles around it, but you also need to challenge a little bit of what you believe about the world.
And we know, and we do know, like, this is the first, younger kids today, you know, for the generation before them, have seen, have only just ever seen kind of prospering environments in their lives. Nothing's actually been hard. The world has not been hard. Cost of money has been really low, which has meant accessing and the family pool of money has been relatively, I guess, not big, but good enough to create a good life, probably, that most people are pretty satisfied with or have a level of satisfaction with. But I think now we're starting to see that difference, and where you've got young people who've, say, been through COVID, like, you know, I think COVID was a real game changer for people, and they've seen something significant happen as well. And, you know, come back to time will make that a little blip on the radar, but right now it was a big element of their life, but it's the knock-on effect of that as well. But I'm not sure kids completely relate that back to money. But I think certainly their parents would. And I think this is a good book for parents.
Yeah.
I really think there's a lot of good long messages in there for parents as well.
Yeah, because I was thinking about how my kids could engage with this as a book. So I think one of the ideas, maybe if it was an audiobook, because they do like listening to podcasts when we're in the car together. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe we could listen to it as an audiobook if that's an option. Because I'm thinking maybe my 13-year-old might make it through the whole book. I don't see the other two doing any of that. But it's interesting that
the sciencey part and the compounding. I keep coming back to compounding. But the iceberg effect, like how icebergs evolved and how they got there, how a little bit of snow melted one year didn't melt completely because it wasn't as hot, and then the next year. And so that evolution and how long that took to occur, and then how we can relate that context to money, because probably kids enjoy learning about icebergs and love that part of life, but maybe not so much that. I think the more it does it have kid-friendly analogies is probably
So that's right. So I think certain kids could pick this up and they would like it. But you're right. I think for parents, it would be a good read regardless. And they start off again. Morgan starts off with the Richard versus Ronald example at the start of the book.
Yes.
Which is very relevant to what you're saying about, you know, when you said young people, you should just do you. But also, I think when we're talking about social media, and they don't specifically reference social media really in this book, but they're saying, you know, the person that's flashing money around, stuff like that, doesn't mean that they're actually wealthy.
Rich versus wealthy. And it's interesting because I do talk about that with the young people in my life, like when they go, oh, look at that. Like, because, you know, you get distracted by the really flash car, the Lamborghini that's parked out in front of a coffee shop or whatever. And like my stepson loves cars, and I'm like, but I wonder how much debt they have. Did they buy it outright? Did they, to put context to that? And I love that, you know, there's rich and then there's wealthy. And often we know that wealth, you know, that wealthy looks different to, you know, some of our wealthiest clients can be so low key and we don't, are very unassuming in the sense of their wealth position.
Yeah. And it's that wealth is what you don't see. I think that is a really important conversation to bring back to kids, because of the two levels of trying to keep up with people around you. Because I think the temptation could be is that they get their money, first jobs, and it's like, you know, I need to wear the stuff to make it look like I'm successful. I need to get to the events to make it look like, I need to go on this travel that makes me look successful. But
yes,
this book is sort of challenging you to really think about what's important to you, because they do talk about time as well, that wealth is also about being able to control your time. Controlling your time is the highest dividend that money pays. And again, that's not the flashy
it's
stuff.
A commodity. It's a commodity. And I don't think, time is the commodity, isn't it? And I don't know if kids think about time in that way. Do you think your kids do?
I think we've covered it in the Start Well classes. So the way that we actually did it, when we talked to them, was that, look, this is what traditional retirement looks like. So we started at the start, here's education, go to work, and there's a long line from work all the way to your 60s. So we asked them,
wake me up when I get to the other end.
Yeah, so does this sound fun? And they're like, no, it doesn't sound fun. So we looked at how else can it work? That's when we talked about the concept of time in retirement, that it can look like education, work, passion project, then education again.
Volunteer.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. I think what the discussion we had to them around time is that if they plot early enough now, they're going to have the options for themselves later on. But then you are trying to avoid the traps that are talked about in this book about, you know, trying to appear rich as opposed to really being truly wealthy in yourself and how you're doing with your behavior. And also the other thing I picked up as well, Michelle, was this book again goes back to the fact that it's the simplest things that make the biggest impact. And in this time of social media, I feel that people are looking for the sexy, sexy answers to making money quick. And this book is not going to tell you that. This book is going to go back to the foundations.
I love that it's that never enough. Yeah. It's almost that, isn't it? There was the couple of sentences. It was a long-winded sentence. There are many things never worth risking, no matter the potential gain. Reputation is invaluable. Freedom and independence are invaluable. Family and friends are invaluable. Mm. Being loved by those who want to love, it is invaluable, and happiness is invaluable. And your best shot at keeping all of that is time to stop taking risks that might harm them.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we value something, will we take the risk with it? And therefore, when do we know what is important to us as well? Because we know that, right? We try to put that at the front of our clients and make sure that we understand them and what's really important to them. And then, yes, we're going to help them with money because we are financial planners, but we want to know what's important to them and why it's important to them and why they value it. Because when we understand that, then we know and we start to tap into the behavior, which is the psychology of money and why we do what we do with our money.
Yes, that's right. So it's the way that you've summed it out, it sounds almost poetic, Michelle. And I think there are poetic points in there. I think maybe that's where there's a lot of like penny dropping moments or light bulb moments when you're reading it. And I would imagine as a parent, almost if you're picking up this book again, you would maybe kind of share it chapter by chapter with the kids and create conversation around it.
Yes.
The only thing I think is a shame, Michelle, is that a lot of it is actually very centered around men and as examples. That's what I picked up very early on. It's like, oh my God, where are the women in this book? There was a wife that was mentioned now and then, but it's very, you know.
When was it written? I didn't see that. I don't know when it was written. I should know that.
That's okay. I'm just flipping through. It wasn't in historical times, but
I think the thing out of the book was about the history and where we've started to invest, where markets of investing and making money have actually started to exist, haven't actually been that really long, long period of time. Like, yes, it has. Like, we know we go back to Roman times and all of those things, and we barter and exchange, and we have gold and jewels and everything. But the actual essence of money and markets in that respect hasn't actually been around for that long a period of time. And then, you know, and there was the example of going off to World War II and what's going on there. So, and that was all about men and men coming back. But I guess it is the men in those days who went off. And hopefully in another 50 years, Dawn, when there's a woman writing a new psychology of money book, that we would see a different lens.
I think maybe I was surprised with that because it was actually an a number of women who are in advising that really enjoyed this book. And mm. one of the things that popped up to me immediately going through it was like, there's a lot of stuff about men. And even like, you know, a chapter about, is it a man in a boat or a man in a car? It was just standing out to me that sometimes I maybe I'm more conscious to it and other people aren't. That I want, if a young woman is picking up this book, that she's able to see her journey in there as well. And I know a book cannot be all things to everyone. And again, highly regarded book. But that was just my small point of observation.
I'm not sure. I think you're right. Like you talked about it. Is it a book that a parent should read and then dissect it one by one with kids? And maybe that is a better way to do that, because then you can put the right, maybe a little bit different examples or look at it slightly differently.
Yeah,
because we know. No, you go.
Yeah, no, because we've come through from you reviewing Girls That Invest. Hard for me to say. But you said what you liked about it is that it made it very contemporary. And Simran Kaur did mention Warren Buffett in there as well. I mean, she did talk about like people who have historically made an impact on investing. But I think she definitely understood her audience. And of course, was not saying that this kind of book, Psychology of Money, is pitched to a broad audience. And Simran Kaur's book is about maybe pitching more to women. But I guess it's a stark reminder that when you have a book like this that's around investing, it can be quite heavy on focusing a lot of the journey that's happened through.
The history is certainly a big part of the book, isn't it? The history,
history
of where, and unfortunately, the history, I think, is the aspect you're touching on. Yeah. I was just looking for, like, I do little highlights in the other thing I thought that was invaluable was around the error. the ability, the room for errors, and that you will, like, there will be failures and there will, but, you know, again, time will smooth out the error and you won't necessarily see that. There were some, I think it is a book. I can see why Kara goes back and reads it.
Yeah.
Probably I should, you know, at some point go back. Once you get to stop me reading other books, Dawn, go back and read it again to see what
other messages. Take your time through it. Yes.
Yeah, take your time a bit and maybe do that bit more pondering at the end and try and see what message that you can take out. The thing I loved about the book was how he at the end said, how do I do it? Mm. I think that was really good, just to be really open and honest, and whilst he's got this job and he does this, then this is how we do it.
Yeah.
And it was just being really clear on, they just were doing them, like, they worked out what enough was. I really loved that message too.
Okay,
what is enough, like, when, you know, and once you know what enough is for you, and, like, look, it can change over time, but as he said, like, they seem to keep coming back to, this is still enough.
Yes.
What they have, but they got to a point very early on, which was probably fortunate too, that they figured out that they were very content in their lives. So if you were a 40-something-year-old woman reading this and you are single and you worry about money, you might go, well, that doesn't really relate to me. But if you were a single 40-year-old woman who's completely independent and not worried about your money, you might go, oh, well, I have built a life that I've got enough and I am doing all the right things that will give me enough. But I think, you know, we do have a focus on the young women, and it is important that I think, you know, that, and not just young women, but I think kids in today's world where everything's so instantaneous, to get an understanding and to get clear on what I need and what I want in my life, which is big adult, that it's big. That's also really big adult things, I think, as well.
So I think,
of not what you want.
Yeah, with this book then, I think if someone's using it as a resource or a tool, it can be quite an enjoyable book for you to go through yourself, and whichever medium that might suit you best, that's really up to the individual. But more so maybe with kids, you might need to kind of guide them with the conversations of where you feel there are key topics coming out, as opposed to some of the books that we've covered on this podcast, where you could potentially give the book to a young person, yes. get them to start off reading it and getting their thoughts from there. So I think all of these books are different.
What age group are you guys giving it out to?
So we actually gave it out to a 13-year-old who won the book in our investing class. Yeah, so we have, don't know if he's actually read it, but we also, we assume that the parents are actually also going through that book with their child. But we just thought it would be a good book to give out as a prize.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting to know what parts of the book he liked.
Yeah.
And then maybe it is a book that you go back to, because at this point when you're this age, you can take these things out of it. And then if you go back and read it again, you can take something else out of it. You know, as you grow through life, there are certainly, I think, things that you could get out of it.
Fantastic. Thank you, Michelle Flanagan, for being our resident reviewer. We have touched on the psychology of money, again, highly regarded by a lot of people because they've really enjoyed the take of how money is explained in this book. We would be happy to hear your views on how you found the psychology of money as well, or if you've got any kids reading the book, what they found as really powerful points in that book, and maybe we can use it, take those lessons back and share it across our community. Michelle, is
maybe
there anything
else? Maybe we should interview someone. Maybe we should see if we could interview one of the kids who've read the book at some point to see what they got out of it.
Yeah, we'd need to get some volunteers to do that. Michelle, is there anything else you kind of want to add to leave our listeners with before we sign off today?
Oh, I feel like I should be giving it a rating or something like that. I did, because I read it on my Kindle. Okay. I do get asked to give it a rating. I did give it 4 out of 5. I didn't give it 5 out of 5. But that's maybe because I felt like it didn't get me to the end.
Okay.
Yeah. So I loved the last 2 or 3 chapters. That was really interesting. All of a sudden I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to need to read all of it. And I need to, like, keep, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't. It didn't get me till the end. So 4 out of 5, Dawn.
Oh, I like it. Okay, so you're brave enough to put the rating out there. So in comparison, what did you rate Girls That Invest, just as a comparative point?
Well, the context I'm giving it is for Start Well.
Yes.
So that's the context as well. So from a Start Well perspective, I think Girls That Invest, regardless of the grammar issue, it is on the money because of where it's pitching at. Okay. And I think it is pitching to younger women, not to your and my age division. So I think then out of that, it's a 5 out of 5 in that respect. And I know Glenn James, I'll mention him again, has said it was one of the best books he'd read. Is that what you said to me? I'm pretty sure you said that. So, but this one I think is a little bit more, there are some bigger things in it and it's a bit drier. It's not so relatable and it's not talking as social media and things like that. And maybe it just needs to be reviewed and a couple of segments like that that might actually pull it all together.
Oh, fantastic. You are an amazing reviewer, Michelle. And then we're looking forward to the next episode that you would have as well, because Michelle's going to be reviewing Rich Dad, Poor Dad, another very well-read, sometimes recommended, sometimes divisive, maybe not divisive book, maybe divisive person. So that will be, we're looking forward to that. Thank you so much, Michelle, for joining us.
Looking forward to it, Dawn. Thanks for having me.
In the spirit reconciliation, I acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connection to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Start Well and investing in the financial empowerment of young people. Please refer to the show notes for resources and links discussed in this episode. Subscribe now to get notified of the latest episodes as they drop weekly. And visit us on the Wealth Designer Start Well page for further resources to continue your knowledge journey.